podcast. KellerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
See how bright we can turn this. Jesus, man.
You guys aren't ready for this jumper.
Jeez.
I don't even know what colour it's coming out. She's not ready. Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct, central London, or central as you could be. And you don't need to be anywhere else, trust me. Why would you? Huh? You'd be wasting your taxi fare. Get online, check this out. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. And hold tight, everybody, with the Kellervision app. You know, hear me telling the Kellervision app all the time. It's a sporting art. It's a place where you get everything 24-7. I mean, 24-7, it's at your dial. You can get it. Mixes and the works. We are inside the ride with a gentleman. I guess he was the poster boy of his time. He was the graffiti writer of an age, and the pixelation does not do him justice. Northern Line Don, Gold is Green Hero. Yo, you know, if you don't know, get to know. Can one inside the place. How are we, gent?
Very well, thank you.
How was that for an intro? Come on.
Yeah, I kind of always feel a little bit embarrassed when people like, oh, yeah, you're this, you're that.
Yeah.
I just see myself as a writer.
Serves you right, though. You've done well. you got biz. You got busy.
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. I think that was the important part for me. I think also as well that being a little kid at the time and age being so important at that time, like if someone's a year older than you, that's
a big deal. Yeah,
it's a big difference. And so a lot of the writers were older. And we used to, you know, there were a lot of different ages there, but you did tend to look up to the older writers.
Mm.
You know, they seem to get, I don't know, it's just an age thing. You know, when you're younger, you look up to the older people, simple as that.
Yeah. Mentors, isn't it? Mentors.
Yeah, but on a level, not perhaps where that person's actually, you know, showing you what to do and things, but certain tags would stand out.
Really?
More than others. And it was, I've talked to people about it recently and we were saying, like, certain tags, for whatever reason, seem to almost hold some sort of charisma about them.
Ooh,
well,
yeah.
You just see that one tag and almost ignore all the others.
Why is that?
I don't know. Is it the style of the letters? I don't know. I just thought it was something worth pointing out because there are a lot of writers from when I was writing, who just don't even get mentioned.
Yeah, they don't.
And they were smashing it.
Yeah.
You know, wow.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting, isn't it? Because now you've got me thinking, like, I'd say, like, a Z and an F, these letters, without getting too geeky in the piece. But, you know, those letters have a kind of dip front.
Right.
And at either side, they kind of, like, eyebrow frown, like, evil.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I guess there is an argument that some letters do lean to being a bit more aggressive looking and a bit more striking.
Well, I think it was the style itself of the tag, you know, what the flow in it, really. Mm. I would look at letters and I'd be looking at the flow, and that's what would attract me. You could write your name, no problem, and, you know, get up and everything, but just certain people had certain styles that stood out from others. And because of that, perhaps they didn't even need to do as much as the other people. It's a weird one.
Hey, that's a really interesting concept. Some people work harder for themselves to keep attention on people.
Yeah, I think you needed to have a certain style to stand out from the others. And that's what I was seeing. And I think, you know, not just your tag as well, your throw up needed to be on point. It needed to be something about it that just separated it a little bit from what other people were doing.
Your throw up, I just have vivid memory of it as a young man, and that sea was crazy. Just the way it was, it looked evil, and from what I understand, reasonably quick to pull off. It's like,
well, that's I simply I can remember sitting down and thinking, I need to do a throw-up, this is important, I'm going yards, I can keep bombing it with my tag, but it's not filling up the panel, so I need a throw-up. And it was never meant to be evil. I don't look at it and see it as evil. I look at it and see it as it was a serious look on its face.
Did have a serious look on its
and
face.
And depending on my mood, it would change shape a little bit as well. So from that, just trying to work with it, what, you know, trying to do a C in a, you know, in a, with a good flow to it as well, which I, that's what I was aiming for. But at the same time, I was like, it needs to be quick. I don't want to be standing there and it, you know, stop start with the nozzle. So it's just one line on a dot.
It's that's perfect.
Simple as that.
But you know, some people can overthink things. This can be overthought. You know, I see certain people's throw-ups to begin with, and by the end of it, they've really simplified the shit down to like that. You know, to a fine view of like, this is actually how it's got to be because I can't, ain't got time to do it any other way.
Yeah. And you could see there were riders who had just been doing their throw-up for so long. It was beyond muscle memory. It was just completely natural, and you'd be hard pressed. You'd have to try and keep up with them in the yard because certain riders would be hitting all the best spots, fronts of the trains, and then you come round to the front and all the fronts have been done and you're like,
what the fuck, man?
There's no room.
It's interesting you say that. It really is, because in this day and age, I mean, I can tell the difference between, like, even the size of the nozzle and the way it's going round, you can see that someone's really done that a lot. Do you know what I mean? And how Drax is a great example of that, where it's just like, Jesus, like, his tag just is relentless, does not, it feels so fluid.
Right.
So consistent.
Mm. Well, I think that when I went and bought some paint recently, and the woman in the shop said to me, she goes, oh, do you want any nozzles? And I was thinking, well, you don't get nozzles with the cans. Come on, really? And she goes, no. And I'm like, am I not getting nozzles? And she goes, no, you can buy this bag of different nozzles. I was like, yeah, let's have some of that. Well, let's see what that's about.
And these aren't paint ones. These are all sorts.
These are like going from skinny, skinny to super fat. So I was trying them all out. And I haven't done anything for over 30 years. So it was all a bit new again.
30 years.
Over 30 years.
Come on.
Over 30 years. And I just come round. You know what? I'm just happy if the nozzle doesn't block.
People, a lot of people just use stock caps. Like,
yeah, I'm happy with them. I use the skinny caps. I didn't really like them. Use the fat caps, and I was like, oh man, I wish I had one of these back then. Yeah.
Although it does blow out a lot of paint.
Yeah,
right?
But I'm just
gotta still get, fun, isn't it?
Yeah. It was all this high and low pressure as well. I was just like, unbelievable. Blowing me away, the level it's at now. Not just obviously the supplies and everything, but the graph itself. Some of these pieces are like technically, I'm like, yeah, they've got it locked down. Simple as that, you know.
So. And we're talking about, you know, a lot of this is in retrospect, but one huge element to this particular podcast is the files.
I wouldn't say files. I was chatting to Fray.
Warning to you all, the files are here. Tell a story.
Well, I was chatting to Fray yesterday briefly and mentioned that I was coming on here, and I said to his, like, is there anything you think that's worth pointing out? And he goes, yeah, I'll get back to you. He goes, I'll speak to you in the morning. And half an hour later, I get a text message from him with literally a list where I'm scrolling down the screen like,
never ending.
This is a lot of topics, man. Okay.
Man, big shout out to Frey. He really pulled it out of the bag for you,
yeah,
man.
Do you know what? I have to say, enough respect to Frey, because when I come on Instagram this year, and bearing in mind I've had no contact with Graf like at all.
No, anybody, not for like 30 plus years.
I'd bump into people and have a chat.
Because you do know, like, just so you're aware of this, like, I remember when we bumped into each other at Robbo's, and it was just, I know you were kind of a little bit reluctant for these reasons, I know. It's actually, people refer to you, man. Like, people, you've got,
well,
you know,
I
did, legacy.
See, I just don't, I...
You should get Kevin.
Do you know what? I just roll with it. And that, and when I bumped into you, that was the first time I'd actually thought, I'm going to go out and just see what this is all about. I'd been chatting to Moz Mosgrove, and we said, yeah, we'd link up.
Big up, Mos.
Yeah, he's,
he was there as well.
Yeah, he's a top man.
Yeah, he's
like,
he's,
you know, just a lovely guy. Mm. And we just clicked, and I went down there, and I like to keep myself to myself a little bit. I'm more of a watcher, and if the time's right, then yeah, I'll come and talk. And you were standing there.
As you do.
I recognised your face. You chatted to a couple of other guys, and one of you mentioned Yardies, and I was just sitting on the bench, and I just thought, well, I've come down here. I should at least make a little bit of an effort. And I remember I just went, yeah, I was in that crew.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. And
yeah.
What was the mad part of it was that I didn't recognise the two people you were chatting to. And they were like, well, who are you? And I was like, oh, I'm Can, which feels a bit weird anyway, because I haven't referred to myself as that for, you know, donkey's years. And it was school and her. Now, me and her used to ride the lines together a lot, and I didn't recognise him. And then once he said, "Yeah, I'm her," I'm like, "Well," he said term first of all, and I knew him from back then. He used to write for another writer, Blue. Blue and Term were pretty big back on my end of the line, anyway, the north end. And yeah, we got chatting, and yeah, it was just like, yeah, it feels healthy. So let's just see where this goes. And I've spoke to them a couple of times since, and linked them when PIC and Saker and what's the other guy?
Xander.
Yeah, Xander.
Old Tide Gang.
Had their thing at Camden.
Yeah, the Shutters. You're not going to be there if you're watching it too late, but trust me, there's a mini doc there for you to check out.
Yeah, that was mad as well.
Yeah.
So I bumped into them down there I've just been bumping into people. Mia, like, when I saw him, it was just like...
What type, Mia?
Crazy. You know, just wow, man. I haven't seen these people for so long, you know. And a lot of these people, we was at the time, we were like a family. Do you know what I mean? A lot of writers, I would say, back then, I spent more time with them than my actual family.
Really?
I got two younger brothers, and one of them, my youngest brother, said to me, goes, I never saw you. I never saw him when I was a teenager.
I was just
out, constant. And I must admit, when he told me, I did feel a little bit bad about it. Like, but I was, you know, you're at an age where I was caught up in something that literally took over my life. Like, and I mean, took over.
People don't realise how much it does.
No, not at all. It was...
What do you think the components are for it to take over your life? Like, what are those core ingredients that make for a perfect... storm?
Well, I can't really speak for other people, but for me, it was the rebellious nature of it. You know, we can talk, you know, like the art aspect and all of that, but for me, it was being a vandal, just going out there and just smashing it. When I saw the trains in New York, the insides. And I was just like, yeah, that's what I want the underground to look like. That, you know, whether it did or didn't, I don't think it got to that extreme, but that's the picture I had in my mind, of that's what I want to see on the trains. Just, I want to see the trains destroyed.
Mm.
And
was it the Americanized nature of it, the fact that it was New York? And
no, I don't think, I think it was just that I just liked that look. We've got this... Now, at the moment, everything is this shiny new. You know, it's all like sharp edges and clean cut. But I like it raw. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I like that raw look. I like things that have got character to them. Mm-hmm. And all the new stuff, like the new trains, I look at them and it's like, meh. Yeah. Don't like them. I like the old, like grimy. When you're out on the line and it's filthy, and I mean literally filthy, where you would blow your nose at the end of the day and it would be black shit
coming out of your nose. That was a real talk.
Creases in your jeans, black creases in your jeans, to the point where you couldn't even wash them out. I've tried to think about, you know, what it was like back then, as in trying to put myself back then, rather than just looking back. But what I can remember of actually being there. And I can remember like seeing you'd be out on the lines and be at stations and you'd see those little mice running around on the track.
Yeah.
Filthy they were. But that's what we were like.
Can I ask you, talking of that mouse thing, like, and I know this is really off topic, but we'd see them sometimes on the underground. You'd be standing there waiting for the train, you see them buzz past. Mm. When you're in the tubes, you must see fucking loads of them.
Yeah. They're just normalised.
Really? You just get used to it?
Yeah.
And rats as well?
Not really rats. It was more... you might see a couple of rats around the yard or something, but it was those little mice.
Yeah.
And I felt like one of those. I was a little kid. Like, I was young. I was the youngest in my year at school. That's why I mentioned the age thing. Mm. I was the youngest. If I was born one day later, I'd have been the eldest in the next year. But I was the youngest, and so was...
Me too, I know that one.
Yeah, so I was, you know... Oh, and because of that, like, my whole school life, I was always the youngest. And that kind of just... That's how I felt. I always just felt like the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And, just a little kid, man. I was tiny as well. I actually bumped into a couple of other writers recently. Like, I was chatting to Saker... And he sent me a picture that Bus One had sent him of this is like, 86, 87. Mm. And I was bopping around with them lot, like Shoe 2, Chrome, Bus, Noise, Mel. And they were telling me it was one of the first illegal raves. Like warehouse raves in London, and somehow or other they got asked to do the backdrop for it, and I'd gone up there with them, and they sent me a picture, and I was just like,
"That must have blown your
mind." I'm like a little kid, man. Really? I look about 10 years old.
Really?
So, like literally, I was tiny, and even Bus was like, "Yeah, little can," and I'm like, "Yeah, I can understand that." I was a really small kid. I didn't start growing until I was about 18.
Really?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
I'm looking at the screen now and I'm thinking, geez, I look huge, man.
Look a lot bigger than me. I thought, what, are you sitting on a cushion or something?
No, I'll
sit up a bit.
It's a bit better. That's a bit more like it. Yeah. Not that the pixelation, that makes no difference. Yeah, just get these more squares going up here now. But yeah, well, we do have these documentations ready to explain more. And I might just add as well.
Yeah.
They're all in kind of broken down shorthand, I would guess.
Yeah.
Because obviously we want to try and cover as much of what you can remember.
Yeah.
And the insights, I'm pretty sure, will be quite, I don't know. As we're talking, there's going to be a lot of triggery moments where you're like, oh, that, then you'll have to remember shit.
Yeah. Well, I guess kind of, I suppose, just a quick rundown of like, you know, how I got into it, first of all.
Before we say anything. Because you don't live in London anymore.
No.
And I know after a while, London cities, it all just becomes all-consuming. And you have to start asking yourself what the fuck's all about. What am I here for? You know, Tizer once said to me, big up Tizer, the city doesn't need you. It keeps on replenishing.
Yeah.
And so you've got to add your worth. And I'm presuming that by you moving out, there were certain signals that were in the air.
Well, I was never going to leave London. As far as I was concerned, I was a Londoner, born and bred, and that was it. Why would I want to leave London? It had everything. And I always thought like that. I always thought, there's no point. What do I want to leave London for? I knew what was going on outside London, but it didn't have the same attraction. And there's just got to that point where I must have been about 35, and I was going through a period where I knew I had to do something different. I'd got myself into a situation that I had to remove myself from. Mm. It was the only way I could. There wasn't an escape for me any other way. And I did need to escape. And I wouldn't say running away escape. It was just that it was a new chapter in my life that needed to happen. And I thought, why not?
Yeah.
Let's give it a go. I wasn't going out. I was going to work, coming home.
Everything was normal. Yeah.
And so, look, you know, I'm shutting my front door. Well, I'm shutting my front door. I can be anywhere and do that.
You know?
I'm happy at home. I'm a homeboy.
I'm feeling that more since the lockdown. I mean, yeah. Since lockdown of 2020 to 2019 to 2020, which happened for whatever time you're watching this. And yeah, since then, of course, there are activities and things going on. But I'll just say at this point in time, Can, you're not missing a great deal. It really is a case of...
I still come to London for work.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So I kind of got the best of both worlds.
Yeah, in a good place.
So, you know, because of that, I still get to be in London, but I must admit, when I'm on the train home, I do like the, as we start coming out and the green fields appearing. I really do. When I was younger, I liked the concrete. Mm. I liked the jungle aspect of it, you know, just mismatch and all of that. Whereas now I'm older now and it's just another chapter in my life. You know, who knows what's going to happen? I don't know. Mm. I know that where I am now works for me very well. Mm. And I'm married. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I've been with my wife 31 years tomorrow.
What? Yo. Well, it ain't tomorrow when you watch this, but congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Congrats to your lovely lady wife. I guess there's a sentiment here that maybe we should amplify a little bit. And it's like, if you're going through some shit, there is normality on the other side, and that everything that you deserve and want in your life, everyone is entitled to. You've just got to work for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, you set your goals, you know, of what you're hoping to achieve. And I followed that line, you know. My mum was telling me when I was about 18, I have to get a job. You're getting into too much trouble now. And this was like a little bit after Graf as well. And I was getting in more trouble after Graf, far more than I was when I was writing. And she was like, you need to get a job. You need some stability. You're at an age now where if you don't, you're going to prison. You know, it would have been inevitable. And without going into too much detail, I was pretty much at that point where you couldn't have been closer to going to prison.
Really?
Yeah. And it was, I was like, okay, I'll get a job. Got a job. And I quite liked it, I have to say.
What was the job?
Printing.
Oh, yeah. I did a stint in industrial printing. It was rewarding.
I've always been a creative person and liked, you know, just the art aspect of things. And it seemed to fit in. And I quite liked having regular money in my pocket, to be honest, rather than the, you know, one day you're skin, another day you
yeah,
ain't.
I've heard about this regular money thing.
Yeah, well...
sounds good.
Well, then, of course, you know... I kind of fell into a little bit of a trap because of that as well, because you get used to having that regular money, and then you've got this pressure of you need to make money. It's all, you know, money is success and all of that. And I got to a stage where I was earning reasonable money, and I felt worse for it.
Really?
I have to say, yeah. But it wasn't doing it for me. I just... reaching a point where, you know, gradually over the course of years, just reaching a point where I generally just didn't have any zest for life. I felt quite broken. So
dragged you down.
Yeah, I think I'd done what we're told to do, you know, and it just didn't work for me. I realised that the only person who could get me out of this was me. You know, I went through tough periods of having to deal with it, like on a mental level. And, you know, that it was, what was weird was it was such a personal thing that what I was going through, it was even hard to explain to people. And anyway, they decided that I needed to go and see someone and, you know, a consultant and speak to them. And, it's just a complete waste of time, because I kind of liken it to, I kind of like to make things simple when you're explaining things. And so I go to see this guy. I've got myself into a situation, And it was just quite simple. You have to go and see a consultant. And I'm just going to call him a consultant because, you know, in the medical terms and all of that, these people, you know, they can call themselves doctors if they want. It's no problem. But I would see them more as a consultant. So I'm chatting to this guy and I'm explaining, you know, what I was going through and my thought process and everything. And he was absolutely no help whatsoever. And I just was like, this is just pointless. What? This is down to me now.
Yeah.
And so going back to what I was saying, like, you know, how, so people can understand what I'm saying. It's like, imagine you go, you want to bake a cake, right? And then someone says, right, you need to go and see this person to bake a cake. And you're like, okay, cool. So you go and the guy says, right, this is what you need to do. Here's the recipe, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, okay, so what are your cakes like? He's like, oh, no, I've never baked the cake.
Yo.
And you're like, well, if you haven't been through it, how are you ever going to understand it?
Yeah.
And that's that whole part of the system, the mental health side, you know, you got to speak to people who've been through it.
How deep down did you go? Like how
breaking point.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, I'm talking like on the floor, fetal position, wailing, just completely broken, like guttural. You know, like when you hear those noises that someone's making and it's like, oh my God, man. If it's on TV or something, it's uncomfortable. Mm. That's the state I was in, just properly broken. I can't do this. But at the same time, I would say being at that point and knowing that I needed help, it was quite a fantastic moment at the same time, as well as, you know, that how bad it was for me. That I can only explain it in the sense that when I was there, just broken, that, you know, like your grandparents, right, and they give you a hug, and it's that kind of hug that it's not like your mum and dad's hug. And I'm not, you know, belittling your mum and dad,
yeah,
but your grandparents' hug. It's just an unconditional thing. Something picked me up off the floor. That's the energy that picked me up off the floor. And I was like, do you know what? This is just unbelievable. It was beyond the physical. And that was a massive moment for me because I could feel the energy there and it was real. Because it got me up, and I was like, okay, it's cool. I can deal with this.
Was it a culmination of a lot of things that led you to this point?
Do you know what? I think Graf did play a part in it, but, you know, to be honest, I think, you know, having lived that period in the 80s of just, it was just amazing, but not amazing as in, you know, bright lights, big city, wonderful time. There were a lot of dark aspects to it too. It wasn't just like going out and bombing. You had to be careful. And I took it seriously, you know, when I was writing. And obviously there's a buzz to it. And, you know, that's attractive. But I couldn't fill that hole in my life when I stopped writing. And I stopped writing because I just weren't enjoying it. It was one day I just decided I'm not doing this anymore. And I'd never been caught. I'd always been on my guard and always tried to pay attention, and it was a real thing for me of I don't want to get caught. This is part of the thing. I don't want to get caught. I want to try and last as long as I can. And when I got to that point where I wasn't enjoying it, that's when I got nicked.
What part of it didn't you enjoy? Because I'm just saying at this point, there's probably a lot of people out there right now that are relating and just nodding their heads in agreement. But what elements weren't you feeling? Like, what got to the point where it was like became passé or not interesting?
I can't pinpoint it. I can't, you know, I realise now looking back, because I spent a lot of time analysing myself so that I could understand myself. Who am I? Massive question.
Biggest question.
You know, like, and I've spent 20 years now doing that. Who am I? I want to know who I am and what I am doing here. And Graf was my life, But again, like I say, looking back at it, my life has always tended to be, I would give myself to something fully, and as soon as it loses its, you know, whatever, I'd go and move on to something else. I've always wanted to understand and learn things, and you know, and I only realised this when I started looking back at, like, in my life, there's been periods of life, let's say 3 or 4 years of doing something, and then I'd move on to something else, and try. And the thing with graph was, though, that it was so fulfilling that trying to fill that, it was impossible. I couldn't do it. I tried everything. I played a lot of football. I really threw myself into football, and I loved playing football. I loved the whole team aspect. It was similar to graph. You're dependent on other people as well. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed playing football. Mm. Great times, made some fantastic friends. But again, got to a point, I'm not enjoying this. Okay, stop doing it. Move on. And that's what happened with graph. I could feel that, and so one time I'd got talked into going yard. I didn't want to go. I knew I didn't want to go, and they were like, "No, just come, man. It's safe. It's fine. Nothing to worry about." And I let myself get talked into it. So yeah, that's down to me. We were in the yard, and I think there was about 6 or 7 of us. And next thing you know, flashlights everywhere, police everywhere, and jumping over fences. And there were a lot of police as well, like far more than I was, you know, thought there would be.
Wow, yeah.
And I'm running down the road, and I knew that they were behind me. And as I've turned back round, they're all running towards me as well. And we're not talking 2 or 3, there's about 8 of them. And I remember they were in, I could see they were Met Police, not BTP. Straight away I was like, okay, that's
cool. Else.
But these lot are running towards me. There's 2 behind me. So I've just turned around, and I was only small, but I was pretty fast. So I just dodged these 2, ran back down the alley, and then someone just kicked my back leg, like, hard.
From the back.
And next thing, I've just, bam, straight on the floor, face mashed into the concrete. And I remember thinking, I can't even be bothered to run. Mm. I just, for whatever reason, I just didn't have it in me. Mm. Any other time, I would have done anything to get away, and literally anything, you know, whatever was necessary. And got nicked, sat in the back of the car. Someone else got nicked. I was sitting in there, so I'd been nicked before a few times, but nothing had ever really come of it. So I was used to it. I knew what was going to happen. So I was sitting there, and I'm getting all the paint off my hands in the back of the car, get to the police station, no comment to everything. Police hate it when you do that, particularly when you're a little kid as well. And I think my dad had to come to the station to pick me up. And they said, "Yeah, you got to come back." So I came back, and I was with my mum, and it was BTP were waiting. And I was like, oh, fuck. But at the same time, I knew they had nothing on me. They hadn't caught me writing anything. And so I just stuck to my story. I knew it was a bit farcical, but I just said I was in the alley having a piss, and next thing, these police came out. And I just ran because I was scared. And BTP, you know, they ain't stupid. And but I just thought, I'm just sticking to my story. That I wouldn't go beyond that. Any other questions, just no comment.
Well, that's the story. That is the story. What do you want? And by the way, at this point, I might add, do not try any of this stuff at home.
No, of course not.
This ain't for you. If you're gonna do,
if you'd have seen my face was mashed down one side as well, and but BTP being BTP, bearing in mind that back then as well, just to add, I never took photos of anything I did. It was
yeah, no,
it was a conious decision as well. I didn't want to leave a trace. Mm. Big up Trace.
Yeah, old Trace.
Old mate of mine, known him since I was 4. And
good footnote. Like
and,
that.
And So I did. Yeah, I had no photos. House had been raided as well. Didn't find anything. They found a pack of Rizzler when they were raiding my house, and the policeman pulled out this pack of Rizzler and waved it, and he was like, "Ah, oh, what have we got here?" And I'm just looking and I'm thinking, well, I guess you don't quite understand that just because there's Rizzler in someone's house doesn't mean anything. And you're not going to find anything else either, because I'm a kid, and if I had something, it would have been in my pocket. It wouldn't have been sitting on the side. Yeah. And there was literally nothing in my house for them to find. Going back, so I'm sitting there with my mum, and the BTP are there, and I had no photos, so everything was in my mind of what I'd done, and BTP pull out a big folder and put it down in front of me. And it was a big folder. I'm talking like, you know, an inch and a half, one of those big photo album things.
Of everyone's pieces at the time?
It was mostly bombing on the Northerns, because they went through the whole album turning, "Do you recognise this? Do you recognise this?" And I was obviously just like, no, 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 no. But at the same time, I was quite intrigued to look at the pictures.
Let's see about the pictures. Very quickly, side note in here. Tell me about the book and the pictures. So what we're looking at, are we looking at like an A4 book, or is this like some sort of like, you know, intermediate arts and design course style book?
No, you know those old albums with this see-through plastic sheet that hold the photos are stuck in?
Yeah.
Real old looking.
Yeah.
I just remember I would love to have had a copy of that.
How many pages was it?
Oh, loads. It was thick.
Thick?
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't just me, but the writers I was with that night, their stuff was in there as well. But I thought to myself, I don't want to sit here and start studying it too much, because as far as I'm concerned, I was having a piss in an alley.
Yeah.
My mum was more intrigued. She wanted to have a look. My mum's like, super cool.
Mum, stop it, Mum.
I speak to my mum a lot, and, you know, and talk about, you know, the different eras of my life and everything. And I've asked her, you know, how did you feel when I was doing graph and all of that? And she said, look, I didn't try to stop you. I knew what you were doing, but you had to do it. And that's how my mum, she's that kind of person.
Obviously,
she was wary. Mm. She didn't really know the full ins and outs of what we were getting up to, because if I told her that, then...
there'd be trouble.
Yeah,
you wouldn't.
Yeah. You know, mum doesn't need to know all of that. But, yeah, I think she quite enjoyed looking at the pictures, to be honest. She's always been on my side, and she, you know, so...
Your mum and dad, were they together at the time?
Yeah, yeah, my mum and dad come to London.
What did your pops think about it?
My dad's a bit straighter, admittedly, but he's cool as well. They both come to London when they were about 17, 18. My mum's from Birmingham. My dad's originally from Scotland, but he was living down in Surrey.
Mm.
And they come to London late 60s. And they've been together ever since.
Fantastic.
You know, so I've always had a good grounding from them.
Not a parental one, you understand. We're talking about... you're grounded as in a person.
Well, they brought me up, you know, as a young kid, they set things in me from a young age that I lost them for a while, but I had them to go back to after. Just how to be a good person, you know.
Shit.
You know, it was just a real healthy upbringing. My mum looked after me and my brothers. My dad went to work. It wasn't, you know, they weren't rich or anything like that. But at the same time, we were rich with the important stuff. You know, my mum would always be taking me and would take me and my brothers to the park every night after school. And that's how, you know, and we had a lot of friends. All our friends weren't English. It was, you know, even though, like, born in London and, you know, that sort of thing, the majority of my friends when I was younger weren't. But we never thought about it.
You're lucky, man.
Back then it was obviously there was a lot of white people But like I say, my friends, I had a Asian friend, a Turkish friend, who I was really tight with, you know. So that, you know, that it was a real healthy upbringing. We weren't brought up, you know, in to see ourselves different from other people or anything like that. And it was good to have that to go back to later. But Graf was like that as well, because it wasn't about where you were from. Although some people made it a bit of an issue, we were all writers, and that was it. You know, it doesn't matter what you look like. Some of us, you know, it was all sorts of characters, all sorts back then.
So when you're looking at this book and the feds are there over you and your mum's having a gander and you're in that zone of like, well, I'm not going to even blink to even give them the idea that I even know what's going on in this book right now. How did you get out of it? Mum, back off, mum.
Well, no, it was just going nowhere because it was just no comment. And they get to a point where they know it's just not... There's no point in asking any more questions. I got charged.
Did you?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
How many times have you been in jail?
Been?
Well, how many times have you been caught? Not jail. How many times have you been?
What, for graft?
Yeah.
That was the once.
Just the once, yeah.
I'd been arrested for things, but not charged. There was no real evidence. I got someone grasped me up.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It's a girl grasped me up because their school got bombed. And I knew who did it. I didn't do it. And the police come to my house because the girl said, oh, he does graffiti, so it must be him. And I was like, I remember they come round. It was like, I can't believe this. And when they say, where were you on so-and-so night? And you know when you're like, I've got no idea.
Yeah, yeah.
How am I going to remember that? And anyway, I'm pretty sure I said I was at home that night. And they had no evidence. It was just based purely on that. And I remember seeing the girl after, and she's like trying to apologise to me. And I was just like, I've got nothing to say to you.
Yeah. Did you know her well anyway?
Yeah, she lived around the corner from me. I was just like, it was bloody liberty.
Yeah, it's a liberty.
You know?
Yeah.
And there was another time as well where it was Christmas time, and I wanted to go out on Boxing Day. Christmas Day, nothing's happening.
As you do, yeah.
So I wanted to go out on Boxing Day and thought I'm going to go out to Moorgate, see what's happening. And there happened to be a particular train on the platform there with a rather lengthy piece on it. And I was like, oh, man, wicked. I'm glad to see that. It's just sitting there. And me being my inquisitive self... decided to, well, what's on the other side of the train?
I mean, who'd have known? You have to go and have a look.
You're just typical me. Yeah, that, you know, what's on the other side? And I walked round and there was nothing on the other side. And I'm walking back down the platform and the next thing, there's police walking towards me and I'm like, are you serious? And there's an LT man as well and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm not doing anything. Just walk around to this platform. Well, we're taking you down to the station. I'm like, oh.
On what grounds do they take you to the station?
Criminal damage. Because there was all graffiti on the train.
What year was this? When was this?
This was Christmas. This was the Merry Christmas piece
that
was done. And so I went to the police station. And they had nothing to charge me with. And I was really pissed off, man. Like,
yeah.
I had a pen on me as well. And I was like, oh, no, that's not doing me any favours. So we got to the police station. I said, look, do you mind if I just go to the toilet? And they're like, no, go on. And I got to the toilet and I just had a little, like, stubby pen on me. It's like a homemade thing. So I made sure that was properly tucked away. No, I couldn't. There was nowhere to get rid of it in the toilet. They even had like a grill where the piss is supposed to run down.
Couldn't you open up the ink and just so it's empty? So no,
it was cool. It was only small, so I just sacked it. And they phoned my dad, and all I remember thinking was, my dad's just going to be really pissed off, man. It's his Boxing Day.
Screwing.
So he came and picked me up from this police station, and there wasn't a lot of conversation, I have to admit, in the car on the way back.
But you didn't do nothing.
Well, my mum said, she goes, I knew you weren't doing anything. And I was like, well, what? She goes, you were in your best clothes. You just got some new clothes for Christmas. And it was like, you wouldn't go out in those. And it was like, no, I wouldn't. I had some black jeans on, you know. And
well, they're set to go grey on the first outing of going out.
And so, just to add to that story. So anyway, so I was in the holding cells while they got my dad to come up. And 20-odd years later, I had to go to that police station, not for anything that I'd done. It was just there was a particular reason I had to go there, and there were some papers that needed addressing, whatever. And I got chatting to the woman in there that I'd had to go and see, and I was cracking a couple of jokes. Quite a friendly person.
Yes, you do.
Not so much when I was younger, but I'd got to a point where I realised that actually there's no harm in talking to people.
That's too short and all that.
Yeah, and she turns around and goes, do you want to have a tour of the police station?
Stop it!
And this is the very police station I was in, and I was like, yeah, why not? And so we went for a walk round in then, and she goes, do you want to see the holding cells? And I was like, yeah, why not? Let's have it, see what all this is about.
Yeah.
Playing, goody two-shoes and all of that. So I had a good snigger to myself, looking at the holding cells and reminiscing about being in there, but yeah.
Were there tags in there since then?
No, I didn't go into it, to be honest. I just stood at the door and was like, the bloody holding cells, ugh.
They look horrible.
Yeah, they're grim, man. If you got to spend a bit of time in there, I have spent some time in those, and I got to the point where I got used to being in them, that I'd go in there and I'd just like take off my clothes, fold them up in a nice pile, and just lie down on the, well, some of them didn't even have mattresses, and just lie down and just think, right, I just got to chill for a bit.
How long's a bit in a holding cell?
Well, it depends.
A day?
I think the longest was when I had to. They held me in because I had court on the Monday. I had court on the Monday morning. Had some mates on remand, and they were bringing them from Feltham, and we were all up for the same thing. I'd managed to stay out of it and not get caught, but in the end, they were coming around my house, and I thought, oh, "There's no. I'm just going to have to go to the police station." Went to the police station. I think it was on. Was it a Friday or a Saturday? One of them anyway. And I had to stay in there till the Monday.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Hell.
Bloody liberties.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, all my mates are in Feltham, so there's only one place I'm going. I'm going back with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And saw them in the cells under the court and got an absolute touch, got up into court, and they've said, yeah, you're going to have to sign on at the police station twice a week. And I was like, oh, my God. My mum was at court. A couple of other people I knew as well. And, for 6 months, I had to sign on every Wednesday and Saturday. It was an absolute nightmare. I used to forget to do it and go into panic mode because you had to sign on at a certain time. Rush to the police station. And
Oh, it's a headache, isn't it?
Yeah, and luckily enough, I managed to get off, and we had the court case and everything. A couple of my mates went down for it and served a bit of time, and I didn't, and a couple of others, and I kind of like, I'm not really feeling this lifestyle too much.
Yeah, because it's just repeat all the time.
Just living on the edge the whole time. It was just a really nerve-wracking, to be honest. And it was, and Graf was like that as well.
Mm.
When I was writing, it was just, there was a nervous tension to it of not wanting to get caught, not wanting to bump into certain people as well, because there was an element of, there was a kind of a bullying mentality with some people.
Mm.
Didn't really happen to me, you know, any major event. I had a couple of altercations where I got the blame for something that I didn't do. Mm. But for whatever reason, they thought it was me. And I took a took a punch in the eye for it and got a naughty black eye. But it kind of came with the territory, to be honest. It's like that kind of thing was happening. I'd seen it happen to other people. So I kind of rode with it a bit. It was upsetting. I didn't enjoy it. You know, who does want to get a punch in the eye?
No.
But I was a little kid and there wasn't much I could do about it. And, like I say, it was just one of those things.
Surely there's like, after a while, it's like you start rattling. There must be some sort of like, I don't know, disharmony in you. That feeling of like a bit of a cross to bear moving forward into your life. It's quite an emotional thing to carry, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I met a guy years ago in Cuba, ex-soldier, got on really well with him. And he made the point of saying to me, you're going to be haunted by ghosts. And I was like,
Hold on, haunted by ghosts, what do you mean?
Well, I didn't really know what he meant at the time. It was only later when I was doing, like, reflecting on my life and really going deep on everything that I'd done that I felt was still with me and I hadn't let go of emotionally. And it soon became apparent that, he was talking about ghosts. Not external ghosts, my ghosts.
Things that you've done in your past.
The ghosts of my past would come back and haunt me. And, they did. And it was hard for me to have to take responsibility. There were things I did that I kind of blanked out a bit.
Give me an example of something that you did that as a anchor to this kind of cross to bear. Like what did you do that was,
well,
what have you done?
I wasn't always the nicest person, that's for sure. Various things, but I don't think I need to say them on camera and be specific about it, but I wasn't a nice person for a while, so I had a lot of stuff from that angle that I needed to resolve personally, where I accept myself as the person I was back then, but not the person I am now. So, you know, people will think of me perhaps, you know, having been away for so long that I'm still that same person that I was back then. I might have done something to them. I don't know. Outside of Graf, but I hope they can understand that I'm not that person now. And I'm quite happy to apologise, you know, if someone says they got beef, I'll apologise, you know. But at the same time, I'm not that person anymore. You know, I'm the person I am now, you know. So had a tough time with it, dealing with all of that. But it's made me who I am now, and I'm happy with that, because that was such a key part for me of just trying to understand who I am. And deal with all of this baggage, because I could feel the heaviness of it, and I had a pain in my chest for a while, and it wasn't like a physical pain; it was more of an emotional pain. And I was well versed enough to know what was going on, but at the same time, I didn't really know how I was going to get rid of it, because I thought I dealt with it all, and obviously hadn't, because I still had the pain. And I think probably at this point as well, it'd be good for me to just mention a little part of the graph. Yeah. Just keep it on the graph as
The
mental health thing.
Yeah.
Of being on a train, used to go bombing a lot on my own. Preferred being on my own a lot of the time as well. It's just, I just felt, you know, more in control and not having to concern myself with what other people were doing. So anyway, I was out on the train in between Golders and Hampstead. Hampstead's deepest station on the Underground, I think, pretty sure. And what I used to do was go between Golders and Hampstead and just batter the inside like as hard as I could. It's quite a long stop as well. Anyway, this particular time, I was like, I really want to batter these trains. I want people to get on the train and see it's battered.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'm just going to start colouring in fry-ups in the inside. There was enough time to do it. My fry-up was quick on the end of the carriage. Anyway, so I was doing that, and the train stopped in the tunnel, and the driver starts walking through, and I'm looking, I'm in a second or third carriage, never went in the front carriage, always stayed away from the front carriage. The driver had a peephole, so didn't want him looking through that peephole. A few carriages down, he's not going to see it. Anyway, he's come into the carriage. He's like, yeah, I've seen what you've done. The call's going through. Police are going to be waiting at the next station. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, First thing, first thought, get rid of whatever I've got on me. Cans out the window, pens out the window. And he's like, I'm just going to mark the spot. It's very, very matter of fact as well. I'm just going to mark the spot where we are now, and they can come back and get those as evidence.
Jesus.
So I'm like, oh, great. What am I going to do, man? You know, like, what am I going to do? And he goes, right, you come in the front cabin with me, and when we get to the next station, blah, 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 they'll be waiting for you. So I've gone in the front of the train, never been in one before. So that was quite surreal, actually seeing the tunnel head on.
And I
was soaking it up, I have to admit, because it was like, oh, this is what it's like being a driver, see, you know. And then you see the light of the station coming towards you. And I didn't really know what to do, and I wasn't thinking too hard I was stuck in there. And bearing in mind, we're inside now. We're not on the outside, like from Golders onwards, where you're outdoors. We're inside the line, and so I'm standing there, coming into Hampstead. Platform's on the right, driver's on the left. Still soaking it up. Wow, this is an amazing view. What am I going to do? Kind of half expecting to see the police on the platform. So while I'm standing there, I heard this voice coming from somewhere that just said, just jump. Simple as that. Quite strong. Not like, you know, when someone says something like, do that.
Yeah.
Enough that it's like, yeah, well, you're doing it. Kind of like, I can't put it in any other way than just simply hearing those simple words of just jump. And as we came into the platform, there's a side door on the old stock. I opened the side door and just jumped out onto the platform. Train's still moving quite fast. I'm rolling all over the floor. There's people screaming on the platform. They're thinking I've fallen out the train. I'm trying to get on my feet. There's a bit of a pandemonium going on, you know. And all I'm thinking, I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of here. Start running. There's a lift and there's a stairway. Straight away, I'm not getting in the lift because I'm stuck there and it's like a cage. So I'm just going to take the stairs, and I'm running up the stairs, and it's never ending at Hampstead. It is deep, hard work, and running as well. Yeah. Adrenaline is like pumping.
But you're busted.
Well, all the way running, I'm thinking they're just going to be waiting for me at the end, at the top.
What's the point of even running? Yeah,
yeah. What is the point? But at the same time, I kind of tell my kids this: just don't give up. Right? You don't know what's going to happen. Don't try and preempt things in life, because just, you know, people want that control of not wanting to know what's going to happen next. And more than half the time, it doesn't happen that way, particularly with a fear mindset as well.
Yeah.
You know, you always think worst case scenario. I'm the worst for that.
Always were, yeah.
So I get to the top, turn the corner, and you can't see my face, but I'm kind of squinting a little bit now. Like, what's going to be waiting for me? And there was not a soul there.
Wow. Not even...
No guards.
Nothing.
No police. No... passengers or whatever.
Get the fuck out of here.
So I'm straight out of the station, run up the hill, couple of side roads, straight in the bush. It was early evening. It was already turning dark and I just jumped in a massive bush and just thought, well, I'm staying here for the minute. And at that point, I could hear bear sirens.
Mm.
Whether they were for me or not, I don't know. I think they probably were because the driver must have put the call through before he'd come through, because that's what he said he'd done.
Yeah.
And so I just waited there and it got dark pretty quick and I slipped up the road to Whitestone Pond where the buses were, jumped on a bus down to Golders and went home.
Voices in your head. Well, that's amazing. Yeah. Story.
I never thought about it at the time. I never thought about it.
Has it always been like this psychological, like, fight in your head?
I've had moments in my life. There's just as a quick one, I got caught racking one time, and the guy, I couldn't get away from him. The geezer was massive, and he proper pulled me in back into the shop, and they took me into the back office. The manager came out and he was like, yeah, calling the police, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, not particularly happy about the situation. I couldn't get out of there. And the phone rang. The manager picks up the phone, starts talking, goes out the room. I'm trying to think of like the specific, whether he finished on the phone or took the call on in the other room, but the phone rang. I heard the phone ring anyway. He comes back in the room and goes, get out of here now. And I was just like,
oui.
Come on, man. Yeah. Whether that phone call was any, who knows? I doubt it, but little episodes like that I never really thought about too much. But at the time, yeah, I was extremely grateful because I just didn't want to get nicked.
Mm.
More than it. That, to me, was a massive part of it. Do not get nicked doing graph. Do everything you can not to get nicked.
Let's go back to the on-the-floor chest pain.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so you were ill.
Oh, yeah, I was proper mash-up mentally.
How did it get to that point? How did you get to the point where you were on the floor?
I was completely disillusioned with life. I can't be more honest than that. I was not getting enough from life itself, but I wanted to take responsibility for that as well. And I'd put myself... where I was saying the pain in my chest, it was an emotional pain.
Mm.
And I'd been studying... And had implemented various things into my life to navigate life.
Mm.
But this was another thing. How am I gonna deal with this?
Mm.
So I started. I tried a few things. And what had got me into that situation was where I had put myself into like a kind of state of meditation.
Right.
Where going back to like the whole graph thing, when you're a kid doing graph, you live in the moment.
Mm.
That's it. There's no thinking about what you're going to do tomorrow because you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. Yeah. So I put myself into this mindset where I just stayed in control of my mind to not allow it to drift into thinking, just absorbing exactly what was happening at that moment. Mm. But I don't know, I probably was naive with it as well. I didn't appreciate that I was opening doors to other realms at the same time. But to describe it, I would say I was pretty much in an ecstatic state for 2 weeks. The equivalent of taking a pill and when you get the rush up your spine for 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
Yeah.
Every day.
And I was having to hold it down as well.
At work?
Go to work and try and be cool. And mad stuff was going on as well. Like, bizarre stuff was going on during that 2 weeks. Like, I could go on and on about it, but there was a lot of bizarre, like, things that would be hard to explain.
So what's going on in your head with just more internally? What was breaking down that was leading
my
you?
My whole thought process was fried. Oh. Where, so to explain it, to try and get an understanding, where our thoughts tend to be images and words, but what was happening was that my thoughts were becoming so entangled that where you would differentiate between each word
to string the sentence,
that wasn't happening. The word would lead into the other word, so the
like a really bad hashtag.
Exactly. So let's just say you say a word, any word you want.
Agree.
Okay. So the first word is agree, and the end letter is an E. So it will just, that next word would start there. So it would go agree, elephant, tangent, Toblerone, ecstasy, yellow.
So it would be the start,
at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find the brake either. So when you know, it was a real head fuck for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I don't know if I can handle this. Is this going to stop?
And you're going to work like that?
And I'm still trying to live my life as well and stay focused and not lose it. And I did lose it because my wife was like, you got to go to hospital. You need to see someone, man, because you are behaving really irrationally. And I was behaving really irrationally. There were things like just quickly where I saw one of my nephews and I was having to deal with past lives at the same time, emotions from past lives. And I knew my nephew from a past life. Mm. And we'd had an arrangement that if we could prove to each other that there was such a thing as past lives, that we had to have a code to try and break whatever was going on. So I'm chatting to my nephew and I'm getting all of this going on in my head and all I'm hearing, you break the glass, break the glass, break the glass. I'm just getting this, break the glass. I just picked up the glass and mashed it off the wall, thinking he's going to clock. He's going to know now. He's going to know that we've met up in another life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's just looked at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like,
hello.
So obviously it was.
What do you think I'm doing? I'm doing what we said we were going to do.
made total sense to me.
Yeah.
And my wife's like, you got to go to hospital. So we went hospital. This was on Boxing Day. And got there and started talking to the doctor. And he's like, we've got to give you an injection to calm you down. And I'm like, no, I'm not having an injection. Bloody blah. They're like, I just decided I'm getting up and getting out of here. And I was hearing things in my head as well, like voices telling me this, telling me that. And I did go on a bit of a mad rampage without needing to go into full details. Nobody got hurt. There was nothing violent towards people. There was violent behaviour, but not to any individual person. Anyway, the police came and they took me outside. And while they was taking me outside, I took my phone out. Took the chip out, ate the chip, and I'm like, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to chip us and blah, blah, blah. And, and they'd already tried to inject me with I don't know what. And I was standing outside and waiting for the police van to come. And then one of the police officers decides it's going to be fun to smash me in my face, basically. Like, proper punch, bam, right in my face. And I wasn't really...
No warning, nothing. You didn't do anything that was...
No, I didn't. It wasn't warranted. Yeah, I'd been an idiot, but a punch in the face.
Really.
And, but I was charged. And I took the punch and just looked at him and gave him a smile. It was just like...
You're not going to get me.
It was like I was living... I've already died. Your punch is like, it didn't mean anything to me. There was an element of humour to it for me, because it's like I was having to deal with past lives at the time. Whether people believe it or not, all I can say is I had to deal with the emotion of past lives. Particularly what I was dealing with at that moment was that I'd been sent to war by my mum, gone to war, got killed, and hadn't come back. And I'm not talking about specific, I was, you know, like, oh, yeah, it was this war during this period, but it was the emotion of it. And, it was really hard for me. But at the same time, it was like, I'm still alive, man. I'm not dead. I'm alive. You know, it's like, wow, this is, you know, it was mad. Real monumental moment in my life that I just, you know, it was a key part for me as well. As mad as it was, it was necessary. I got taken to the police station, put in a cell. Thing is, I didn't see you. I couldn't see you as a human being. I was seeing your personality, and it was a little bit scary because most people tend to think to them that they're good people and they can portray that image. I could just see straight through all of that. So I knew straight away who was a good person, who was a bad person. I just look at you, and that was really scary for me, because it was like...
straight through the pupils.
It's almost like seeing their emotions and who they really are.
Like they live beyond, kind of shit.
Yeah, like beyond the physical. Anyway, this doctor's turned up, and I didn't want to look at anyone in the face because I didn't like what I could see. It was quite upsetting. But this doctor's looked at me, and I've looked up at him, and I just saw death. I hadn't seen any of that in anyone else, but this guy, I knew this guy was not a good guy. And he's like, well, I'm going to give you an injection now. And I was like, no, you're not giving me any injections. I'm not having an injection. He's like, well, and the police, and they're all like, well, you'll get sectioned then. Like almost like, you know, like a kind of the consequence kind of thing. And I'm like, well, I'll get sectioned then. I said, well, I'm going to tell you now, if you try and inject me, I'm not taking responsibility for my actions from that point because of what you've done to me. So I'm leaving it there. And I think they kind of expected me to take the injection, and I was just like, no, I'm not taking it.
No.
It's just not happening. I don't know what's in it.
No.
They're telling me, well, the presumption is going to calm me down. I don't know that. The state I'm in, I don't know how that's going to react. Yeah. Anyway, so I got sectioned. But before that, I had to be interviewed as well. And some guy came down, because I was older. You need, like, so in, when you're in that kind of state, they wanted somebody there in the interview. And this guy turned up. I refused to look at anybody in the face at that point. I just didn't want to see them. It was an element of scariness to it.
Yeah.
And this guy's turned up, and we have a little chat. And I tell him what's going on. I thought, I'm just going to have to be honest with this guy and kind of trust him a bit. He's here to obviously help me. And he goes, look, he goes, when we go in there, he goes, I'm going to cross my legs when it means no, when you answer no, and uncross them when it's yes. So I just sat there, watched him do it, answered the questions.
It's fucking genius.
It was mad. I never saw this guy's face. I don't even know. I don't know what he looked like. He's an Australian guy.
So you just didn't...
I couldn't look at anyone.
He's like your Ziggy from using Quantum Leap.
What with the little box thing? Yeah.
He's like, there you go. Do that. Do this. See you on the other side.
Yeah. And
wow.
So yeah, they took me to the psychiatric unit, kept me in there. The doctors and that had a chat with me. That was really uncomfortable because, like I say, I couldn't see you physically so well. I couldn't differentiate between man and woman. I didn't know if you were a man or a woman. I couldn't tell. It was almost like I could see their other characters.
Yeah, yeah, it's They Live. It's that They Live shit.
Yeah. And it was... I spoke to that particular doctor a couple of days later and was quite apologetic to her as well. Because, really? Because yeah, she's a really attractive woman. And I said, and I was saying to her, I can't tell if you're a man or a woman. You know, and it was...
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I could
yeah.
tell she...
It's just to give a personal complex. You know, like,
that's not going to go down... too well.
Yeah, yeah.
But we got on really well. I'd calmed down by that stage and knew I had to get out of there, man. I didn't want to stay in there. The assumption being I'm going to be in there for 28 days. I'm not being in there for 28 days. I'm looking at the people in there and I'm yeah. like, I've got to get out, man. I'm taking responsibility.
So you played to their rules and you...
Yeah, I had to. I had to take a couple of tablets. 3 days.
Three days
before when they let me out on a little day trip just to see if I was okay. And then they said I could go home and stay at home one night. And it was awkward, you know, and I really feel for my wife because it was very out of character for me to behave in that way. But I sat down and explained everything and said, look, I'm getting better now. I'm in control now. I know what's going on. I can deal with it. Bear with me. I'll be better for it. Mm. And I'd like to think I am better for it because I took responsibility rather than trying to blame people, play the blame game, you know?
Mm. Own your pain, innit?
Yeah, I wanted, you know.
There's people there to help, but own your pain.
It's typical of me to dive in rather than go baby steps.
Mm.
Just typical. I've done it in too many things in my life where... The eagerness to learn.
Mm.
I want to know now.
Yeah.
You know, what's this about? And that's just typical of me. So it was.
Wow.
It was a mad moment.
To think that you were sectioned and. I don't know. I just feel he's self medicating in the day. You had a. The guy on holiday was right. There was
massively right.
It was pain. Perhaps
he'd been through it. You see,
yeah.
I don't know. We didn't. We weren't together long enough, and I wasn't on that frequency then to probably appreciate what he was saying. He could have, you know. For myself, you know, I've spoke to people, listened to what they said, and it's not till 5 years later it's suddenly like, fuck yeah, he told me that. It just went straight over my head.
Like, and reminding yourself now of the jump scenario and
yeah,
all these
the
different
voices,
things that...
The voices.
Play of across...
The hearing voices. Yeah. That, point towards there's something else to this life, man.
Do you think there's a... I mean, with all of this aside, that having a singular purpose in life and... being able to channel your energies, that's like so important. Like,
I think it's the number one objective, personally. I don't know, I'm not going to say for everyone else because I think, you know, we're all on different journeys and we're all at different stages as well. Mm. So what I've been through, you know, is my journey. I see a lot of people struggling and it used to be hard for me. To cope with that, but having gone through what I went through, the pain in my chest went after that. The emotions that I felt were holding me back, because I think, you know, look, if I'm having to deal with I've been killed, and it wasn't that issue. That wasn't the issue. The issue was I blamed my mum. And that was the emotion I was having to deal with. It was my mum's fault.
Hmm.
That was what was eating me up. And it felt contained with me and I needed to deal with it and accept the situation, you know. And here I am now.
I would
like to help people, you know. But I'm well aware that not everyone wants help. You know, some people are happy not to have help. And if you want help, you got to ask for it. You can't just expect it.
Yeah.
You have to ask for these things. The universe is listening.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it may sound like I'm going off on a bit of a wooey one, but...
No, you've experienced it.
This is my journey.
It's down.
And I would say that when I was on the floor, at that stage of being broken, that I got lifted off the floor by something non-physical that I can only describe as the hug from your grandparents. Mm. That's what I felt, and that's what pulled me up. And it was, it stayed with me ever since. It's not, it's, I can just think of that moment and just think, everything's all right, man. It's not, you know, just be cool.
Mm.
It's very easy to try and preempt things of what's going to happen.
Mm.
That's you want to. There's a saying in Africa, Sankofa. And I was drawn to this symbol a year, years ago, and it's it translates as in order to look forward, one must return to the past.
Mm.
Quite fitting as
and
well.
And what's it called? What's it called?
Sankofa.
Sankofa.
It's a bird.
Yeah, yeah.
With an egg on its back.
Right.
And it was very fitting for me as well to have these things, you know, to help me get through it, because I knew I had to deal with my past to be able to clear the decks. And so Graf was a part of that as well. I had to deal with that, because that was it was an amazing time. Amazing doesn't always have to mean, you know, good.
Good, happy.
You know, yeah. It was just an amazing time.
You don't regret any of it?
I don't regret any of it. I chased that buzz for a while. And I would like to say one thing. There's only, for all the times I tried to get that back in my life, the buzz, basically, I couldn't find it. And for people to kind of understand what Graf meant to me as a kid, for me to experience that again, I did. But it was completely unexpected. It was when my son was born. That is the buzz. That's the only way I can describe it. I never had that buzz until that specific moment when my son was born and I was there. And that's how I felt. And that's what Graf was like for me.
Wow.
That's, you know, she'd be like, really? Graf meant that much to you? Yeah, it really did. I absorbed it and absolutely loved it.
And people, so it reset your life and responsibilities and mindset, just the family lifestyle, the parenting.
I think what it was understanding that it's all this about, you know, what you've got and what, you know, what is success, and
means nothing.
Yeah, my interpretation of success, you know, would quite simply be being an emotionally mature person who, you know, is prepared to help other people, you know, who were going through tough times. Because we are going through tough times. This period now is tough.
If you're listening, it's not 2020 something. This was a time of complete and utter confusion in the world.
Yeah.
You've probably experienced it by now.
Yeah, I think we've always had it. Yeah. There's always been these periods, you know, and this period now is a big battle. You know, there are lots of small battles along the way, but this is a big battle now. And this, I think, when we was chatting earlier, before we started, you know, this whole thing with a lot of people getting very nostalgic and reminiscing about the past. Mm. I personally, after chatting with, you know, with people about this sort of thing, lean towards it's because we're not enjoying this period now.
No, and it's all uncertain.
Yeah, and it's you can feel that it's not right, that, you know, I don't want to go off too much about it, you know, because it's, it's a dark time. That's what I'm going to say. It's a dark time. And many people have told me that, many, you know, educated people in other realms have told me that it is. And you need to be very grounded now. You need to be in control of your whole thoughts and everything like that, that it's going to be vitally important. It is vitally important anyway, but let's deal with it.
To get to where you are now, the age you are and the experiences you've had, You got one hell of a level head on your shoulders, brother.
Not always, though. You know, I'm happy with where I am. No, I'm not happy. I'm not going to use that word happy because I don't think it's the right word to use. I think because what people think, you know, the battles that are going on between, you know, trying to reach happiness, you know, and that sort of thing. I just want to be happy. No, I don't want to be happy. I know I'm going to be happy at points. Mm. At the same time, I know I'm going to be sad at points. I could be really upset at points and I could be really happy at some points. But I want the middle ground. I want to be content. I want to be able to enjoy those moments and I want to be able to deal with those moments on the other end of the scale. And I need to be in between the two. So I'm not chasing anything. I'm just content with how it is. And I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's, for me, that's an important thing. You just don't know what's going to happen. No. You just don't know. This, you know,
from 1 week to the next, from one day to the next.
I just, you know, the unexpected happens, isn't it? Mm. You know.
And it's all part of a big part of a tapestry.
Yeah.
It just keeps on moving.
I liken it to, when I spoken to people and they're like, you know what, you've decided to adopt this sort of journey to your life now of trying to understand it, and you know, how do you feel you're doing, and you know, whereabouts do you think you are on it? And I obviously had to sit down and have a think, because you want to try and explain these things clearly. You know, I think it's important when we have these conversations that we don't get lost in words that people don't understand, because words, you know, strong things. So magic spells
are words.
That's, you know, they're powerful things. So I want to try and explain things in a very simplistic way, and so using that sort of idea of, you know, magic spells and what's important with them, and knowing that what you say can have a massive effect on people. So you do have to choose your words very, very wisely.
As in, there would be words are the spells that...
They are spells.
...drag people
how,
into...
How are they not? You know, we talk about, like, you know, magic spells, you know, like Harry Potter with a magic wand and, you know, all of that sort of thing, but...
It's the word is a sorcery.
Out, yeah, it comes out your... You've got to be careful, man.
Yeah.
You can scare people. You can create...
Direct,
you know,
them into a whole different world of thinking.
Yeah. Manipulate people. We're
and they'll think
it.
That it's natural. It's spirit. They've become spiritualized in the fact that someone's told them something factual. But that's just your input into what would be mediocrity, and that just one morsel of thing could have someone going off on a complete tangent.
Yeah, I mean, we as an example, you know, with words, you know, that certain words, like the what do you see? See with, you know, your eye, the pupil. And what is a pupil? Well, the pupil's the student. And so if you want to learn and you see, that's why I don't like the whole woke thing.
Mm.
It's the terminology. I'm you know, the word itself, woke, to me conjures up is the past.
Yeah, past tense. Yeah.
I would rather be awake and seeing what's going on now, and so using my eye, which is the pupil, but the pupil is the student, and not thinking that you know it all, and you know, because how can we ever know it all? There's so much to learn in life, you know, and that's,
always be the student. Always.
Yeah, exactly. Always, you know, the teacher should always be the student too. I've learned so much from people that I wouldn't have thought that I'd be able to. People, you know, have just come out and said it might just be a sentence, and I try and pay attention. I try and pay attention of what's going on during the day and everything that I'm doing, because I want to go to bed and I don't want to have to go to bed and think, oh, why did you do that? Oh, you idiot. Or, you know, that I don't want baggage. I want to be light on my feet. I want to be light inside. Just as simple as that. And so I try and deal with everything as it's happening, paying attention to what other people are saying, listening. I never used to listen to people. My mum drilled it in my head from day one. Patience is a virtue. I didn't know that she was what she was saying was you're impatient.
Yeah.
and it only clicked later where I was like, oh yeah, mum, you're telling me that for a reason, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, let's try and be patient. And I do try to do that and listen to what other people are saying. And so going back to what I was saying about, you know, what is it like living that kind of life? Because, you know, I get on with my day-to-day stuff. I'm not sitting on some cave, you know, with my legs crossed and all of that. I'm hiding from it if I do that. I need to... I'm part of this, you know, and I want to live my life, but I want to be able to navigate it as well. And so when somebody said that to me, I was like, it was kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. And as you're going along, certain things happening, and those things happening are the pieces in the puzzle. And so you're putting it together, and, you know, like, the obvious thing when you're making a jigsaw is to look for the sides and the corners.
Yeah.
But there ain't any sides or corners.
It just keeps
growing and growing and growing. And that's how it is, and I love it. I love life now. You know, I can't say any more than that. I embrace it, everything it has to offer.
You know what I love about these podcasts is like Graf is just the sign on the door.
Yeah.
But there's lives within these cans, and there's life within these writers.
Mm.
And just to have a conversation with you about it, I really appreciate. And we've gone into some subjects here that has never been touched on podcast before.
Yeah, well, I think it was awkward for me because I didn't know whether I really wanted to do this. I have not had anything to do with Graf. It was something that happened, but I've done other things since. But for whatever reason, it's come back round a little bit. And
it certainly has for you.
Yeah, I still find it a little bit weird because being a kid, I didn't look at what I was doing. I didn't sit there and think, yeah, there's my tag, there's my tag, there's my tag. I was always looking at, there's so-and-so's tag, there's so-and-so's tag. Not perhaps thinking
Which
so much.
Actually, we might just add, while we've got the... Because there's some shout-outs here that I'd clocked.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's time to give these people that were doing their thing around that time a shout-out. Because I know there's some names that have barely got their heads up on here.
Well, there's people who I started writing with. Well, Cade, obviously.
Or Tuck Cade.
Yeah. That was, we had a mad time. Have I mentioned going to yards with him?
Go for it.
The Golders? No,
go for it.
Okay, so, sorry, we have talked a fair bit, but it's a bit of an overlap.
Yeah, go on.
And, so we went yards. Before we went yard, I done a piece with another mate at Golders. And there's a wall next to the guard hut where the yard is. And we went at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was really one of those, you know, like tension. This was all very new to me, especially going out in the middle of the night. And we done this piece saying UKB for UK bombers on the wall next to the guard hut. And when I think back, because I haven't thought about these things for such a long time, and why we could have done it on a train.
Why didn't you do it on a train?
Because we didn't think about doing it on a train.
Wasn't it hotter to do it on the...
Yeah, but we were new to it. Actually realise that we could actually do it on a train, and the trains were there.
But you thought the wall was a little bit more convenient.
The wall was there, and we were like, we'll do it on the wall. And we could hear them in there making their tea and the tinkling of the spoon on the teacup.
We'd get back
down and spray a bit more, and it was mad. Because there wasn't really that many people around our end who were doing Graf. Well, the writers were all coming from south. Everything that we were seeing was coming from south on the train. So, you know, that people like, well, one of the names that stands out for me is Mag from Gangsters. It was a tag I remember seeing on the insides that really stood out for me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's writers from that period, you know, Lazy Lady. A lot of them come up to Golders one time and bombed all Golders. And I remember going up there and being like, well, who are all these people?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen their tags on the trains.
Mm-hmm.
and a couple of stations, but what are they doing up here? Anyway, so let me just think.
Yeah. Get them in.
There's so many like names from back then. The particular people who looked after me, there was a writer, Ariane.
Hotter Ariane.
He's in WD. He really looked after me when I was young.
Big up WD.
Yeah, he looked after me. He had a mate called Rudy as well. And, I was starting to explore, and the people who were writing in the area were names like, let's see, there was Neil. He was in the crew Rebel Alliance. There was Capital 03. He had a brother, Rank. There was another guy, Marek. There was Alex. The other writers that I was starting to see, well, there was Event around as well, and Cares. I'm mentioning people that I knew.
Yeah.
Not so much people, there were writers that I didn't know, but it's so many, man. Yeah.
I see Sham on there as well. Sham. Hold up, Sham. Car 138.
Yeah, Car 138. Cliff. Went to his house and got introduced to all of them crew as well. Bus and Shoe 2 and Noise. Chrome as well, and his brother Her.
I'll take Noise, DDS Noise.
No. Noise. Would it be Noise 207? Is he in DDS?
There's a couple of Noises.
I think that might be new. I'm talking about when it was New Wave Arts.
Okay.
Cliff, another one that I spent a lot of time with. Sub, I went out a lot with. Oh, there's so many, man. Did I say Frey?
No.
Okay.
Hold tight, Frey.
All right, Frey. Keep.
Again.
Great times with him, man. Great times.
And we know you're out there listening, man. We know you're out there listening.
Other faces, there was Net One, Diet. I used to see a lot of him as well. There was Pim17. It was a SAS crew were quite on it, particularly the Northern Line. Mess, I spent a lot of time with Mess. Had really good times with him out bombing. There's just too many names, man. Like from back then that really
should get a shout.
Yeah, it's hard for me to try and remember them all. I've tried to take notes, and I'm looking through, and I'm like,
I told you, this is the undisclosed documentation right here.
Who else is here that doesn't really get mentioned? It's not. I mean, everyone knows all the other writers. You know, Chain spent a lot of time with Chain.
Hold tight, Chain. Wow. You know,
Yeah, smashed in yards. I have to say, he was ruthless, and it was infectious.
Really,
being with him, yeah.
We got him on podcast. He's coming on.
Yeah, get him on, man, because he's gonna have some. It's good to understand what it was like back then.
Yeah,
living on the line, because we really did live on it. I spent so much time on it that I just became part of it. It was just, I'd get up, get dressed, and go jump on a bus and go and jump on a train. And talking of buses, when I was going to school, there was another writer that used to haunt me. Time. He was all the 13s. They used to run down through Swiss Cottage and all of that, and down to Aldwych, and he always used to see his tag, and it was things like that that kind of drove me on a bit, because I wanted to be a bomber, you know. That to me, piecing was great, but I wanted to be a bomber. That's what it was all about for me, was just a vandal.
Legendary.
Anti-system. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the amazing, the awesome, the Don Da Dapper Dan. Can one inside the place.
You can just ignore all of that, because I know he likes to do that.
Come on.
Yeah, I'm just another writer from the 80s, and I like it that way. That's why it was awkward for me to come on, because I don't see anything other than, you know, we've all got stories, man, and I think, you know, that you stories are what it's about, life, and listening to stories, because there's something about them, and it's almost like, you know, you can imagine before all of this, you know, digital era and, you know, before things were more industrialised, sitting around a fire and, you know, listening to the stories.
Totally.
It's just an amazing thing.
This is where it's at.
And this is, this is part of it. This is just my story. And I've enjoyed being able to talk about these things because it's a bit of a taboo subject for a lot of people.
Mm.
And, it can be lonely as well.
Mm. And you're never alone. Whatever you're going through, you're never alone.
No, and ask for help, man. Mm. Particularly if you don't wait until it gets too hard and too heavy that way. Ask for help. There's no shame in it.
100%.
You know, there's a lot of good people out there, man. There's a lot of good people who really want to, you know. But I think until somebody asks, you don't want to impose.
Mm.
And force yourself upon them. You know, even though you can see they need help, they need to be at a place where
they're
taking responsibility now, you know.
And if you're out there listening, you know it's true. You know what to do.
Yeah, simple as that.
Can one.
Thank you very much, my brother. I appreciate it.
It's been interesting. Yeah, it has indeed. Seriously, like, blow my mind. I wasn't expecting it. I'm going to be... This is me for the rest of the week and the weekend. Full of musings and thoughts. Thank you for joining us, Killer Keller Podcast. Out like in was out of fashion. You know what to do. It's the sharing and caring game. We don't do it without you. You are us, man. Don't talk to anyone. I wouldn't. Stay lucky, people. Till next time. Peace.